Action is a co-production of AVO and EWTN Radio and across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Wednesday, moving through the month of October very quickly, October 14th, 2020. Thanks so much for tuning in to EWTN. Then we have an EWTN hour, always, of course, we are on EWTN, but I mean that very specifically in terms of our guests. Very excited to have my friend, fellow journalist, news director, host of the world over, New York Times best-selling author, our friend Raymond Arroyo is going to be joining me. He has another book out, this one for children for Christmas, and it's so beautifully illustrated. The title of the book is The Spider Who Saved Christmas, and it's published by our friends at Sophia Institute Press. And so Raymond and I will be talking about the new book. You want to get it for Christmas, for a gift, for your children or grandchildren or niece or nephew. But I can't wait also, in addition to promoting this resource, also to talk with Raymond, as I said in our email exchange yesterday, about current events and what's happening in this crazy, topsy-turvy world of ours. Raymond just makes me laugh. I love his segments on Fox News. He makes me, you know, roll on the floor with some of the stuff he says. I told him, I said, if it weren't for you, I would probably just lose it because it's just so crazy out there. And he just has a way, he's just had this really fun edge about him where he's making his points, but it just makes you laugh. I think he's got a great sense of humor, but can't wait to talk to him not only about the book, but also, of course, spend some time looking at what's happening in the media world and out there on the campaign trail, what he's seeing, what he's covering, and of course, as always, what's coming up on his excellent programs here on EWTN, including The World Over. And then speaking of EWTN, our very own Joan Lewis joins us on a Wednesday, as she always does. Lots of news from Rome, including some latest information on more restrictions. I saw a story last night on just how badly the economies are doing of the various countries who've really had those strict lockdowns, such as Italy. Italy, in terms of the GDP, is at the bottom of the barrel. They are just really struggling. The economy in Italy was already bad, but when you shut off tourism, especially from the United States, basta, forget about it. And why is that? Because even though Europeans can travel within the European Union and can go to Italy, they do not spend the kind of time or make the kind of investment that folks coming from faraway places, predominantly Americans, spend in Italy. Because when people are going to Italy, they are thinking, I'm only going to go there once or maybe twice. And so they're looking for the nicer hotels. They're looking for specialized tours. They're looking to really buy some specialized items. And it's a huge market. And that's gone. And especially the churches and all the different tours that happen and these package pilgrimages, many like we do. So Italy, it's tourism, and especially in the area of pilgrimage, is really suffering. So Joan Lewis will talk to us about that, but also some news, latest news from the Vatican as well. So it is going to be a busy, busy Wednesday morning. Hope you can stay tuned for the entire program. And don't forget to check out all the great shows on EWTN. I think I told you about the new roundtable discussion that they're having on election issues, hosted by Doug Keck, and also featuring Father Robert Spitzer, Father Mitch Pacwa, and Colin Donovan. Amazing discussion on the non-negotiable issues and voting with our it was really, really well done. And more of that is coming up. Plus, they have a special tonight, and we'll mention it in a little bit after the break, regarding their follow-up to A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing 1. This is A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing 2, and it is another one of those just incredibly well-produced documentaries which looks at the whole transgender agenda and what this means and what's behind it. And this is extremely important going into yet another major election that could really tip the scales in terms of where our country is going. So this is the kind of information we need before we go into the voting booth. So EWTN.com, go under TV for all their programs, and we'll have more on that a little bit later. Also, I put together a great resource for you, including links to EWTN programs, links to EWTN voting guides, also links on AveMariaRadio.net. I don't know if you had a chance to see the interviews that Jeanette Williams did with Al Cresta. Fantastic. And looking at what's at stake for the soul of America and the world. And we've got links to those at my voter's guide on my website. We also have links to the network and all of our news outlets. I was talking with Father Frank Bivona, as I do once a week in the first hour of my program. And I'm going to start, as you may know, you may have heard me mentioning it, I'm going to start on Friday something called Friday Fact Check. And then we're also going to be starting this week, hopefully tomorrow, Faith versus Feelings. I really don't think I can recommend secular outlets anymore if you're trying to get information for your Catholic faith, because they're just so unreliable and they're just so biased. And they literally, unless you've got someone like a Raymond Arroyo that you can turn into if he's covering a story for Fox on the news, but that's the exception. I'm talking about if you're going to get your news. I just don't feel confident because they're so extremely biased. I mean, they're just out there and they pick up on talking points of the left, and it's like they're literally working in unison. And so what I'm trying to do is show you how this happens and give you concrete examples. So we'll be doing a lot of that each week now on Friday in the National Hour called Friday Fact Check. And then we're going to have various EWTN experts and theologians on. We're working on getting Father Mitch Pacwa on. I believe we're also, he can't do it this week, but I think tomorrow, instead of Father Mitch will probably be next week, hopefully. We've got Ralph Martin, Dr. Ralph Martin, coming on. Of course, you know him for his many years on EWTN, The Choices We Face and Renewal Ministries. He just did an amazing video on what's at stake in the election and what our faith tells us, what Scripture says. And if you want to have a look at that, you can go to my Facebook page at MrsTeresaTomeo.com or TeresaTomeo.com/voting. Very simple. We've got, and I know it's hard sometimes when you're busy and you're trying to say, well, where do I go for information? What do I do? My head is exploding. This just gathers everything for you. And you've got documents from the church. You've got quotes from the catechism. You have excellent articles from The Register and from Catholic news agencies. You have those interviews I mentioned with Jeanette and Al, links to the programs I just mentioned. We pulled everything together so you can go one-stop shopping. So just go TeresaTomeo.com/voting, and it's right there for you, including our excellent EWTN Voters Guide. All right, already 7 minutes past the hour. I don't want to cut into any of our time with Raymond. I want to make sure we have every single minute with him. So let's get to it and see what's happening on a Wednesday morning, October 14th, 2020. Well, Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett spending another day being questioned by senators as her confirmation hearings continue. The 22 senators on the Senate Judiciary Committee each having 20 minutes to ask questions of the conservative federal judge. And Amy Coney Barrett yesterday calling herself an originalist, telling the senators that she doesn't think it's her role to update the Constitution or infuse her policy views into it.
I interpret the Constitution as a law, that I interpret its text as text, and I understand it to have the meaning that it had at the time people ratified it.
She also said she is committed to judicial independence.
I can't really speak to what the president has said on Twitter. He hasn't said any of that to me. And what I can tell you, as I have told your colleagues earlier today, is that no one has elicited from me any commitment in a case.
Barrett is a Catholic mother of seven. She's a judge on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals and formerly taught at the University of Notre Dame Law School. Pressed repeatedly as Catholic news agency explains her views on abortion, marriage, health care, and other issues, she invoked a standard yesterday that she credited to the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg when she had been considered for the court. No hints, no previews, no forecasts of future decisions, as Barrett summarized it. Opponents of Columbus Day are misguided in their criticism and miss the important message about unity and inclusivity that the holiday continues to offer America. That's a direct quote from the U.S. Secretary of Labor, Eugene Scalia. He said, Columbus Day stands for ideals and principles that are woven into the fabric of our nation and which are as important today as they were on the first Columbus Day back in 1892. He spoke at Franciscan University of Steubenville earlier this week, reflecting on criticisms of Christopher Columbus and the holiday that bears his name.
There's a movement to redesignate Columbus Day in honor of Native Americans. But to honor Native Americans, you need not dishonor Italian Americans and Catholics and denigrate a day that for millions of Catholics represents an early turning away from the nativism and know-nothingism that buffeted them in 19th century America. That first Columbus Day welcomed Catholics and recent immigrants as equal sharers in the American dream and acknowledged, if only for a day, Native Americans as rightful participants in our national heritage. Maligned by progressives today, Columbus Day was an early celebration of something progressives purport to value: diversity and inclusion. In fact, Columbus Day is a more meaningful reflection on American diversity and inclusion than some of what masquerades as diversity training in some workplaces today.
Scalia warning that activists driving the opposition to these statues want to fundamentally redefine how we view our nation's character and legacy, proposing a vision, he said, of America as fundamentally oppressive and discriminatory.
Recently, we learned of so-called diversity training given to employees at the U.S. Department of Treasury, who are taught that, quote, virtually all white people, regardless of how woke they are, contribute to racism. Workers at one federal lab were given materials telling them that racism, quote, is interwoven into every fabric of America, quote. At another federal lab, workers were told that an emphasis on rationality over emotionality is a characteristic of white males.
More than 30 statues of Columbus have been or are set to be removed. Other statues across the country have also been torn down, including those depicting Star-Spangled Banner author Francis Scott Key, President and Union General Ulysses S. Grant, and, of course, St. Sarah. Now, a group of activists near San Francisco on Monday defaced a statue of St. Sarah on private property with red spray paint before tearing it from its foundation. Sarah, an 18th-century Franciscan priest and missionary, is viewed by some as a symbol of colonialism and of the abuses, as Catholic News Agency explains, that many Native Americans have suffered after contact with Europeans. However, historians say the missionary protested abuses and sought to fight colonial oppression. San Francisco's Archbishop Salvatore Corleone is saying yesterday, this is mob rule that led to the statue of the saint being mindlessly defaced and toppled by a small, violent mob. He said this kind of behavior has no place in any civilized society. While the police have thankfully arrested five of the perpetrators, what happens next, he said, is crucial. For if these are treated as small property crimes, it misses the point. The Archbishop going on to say the symbols of our faith are now under attack, not only on public property, but now on our own property and even inside our churches. And finally, in our news segment, Mitch McConnell says the Senate will vote on coronavirus relief, as Dean Mucciar reports, when the chamber returns next week.
In a statement, the majority leader said it would be targeted relief for American workers. That includes new funding for the Paycheck Protection Program, schools, and hospitals. The Kentucky Republican argued there will be time to pass it before getting to the Supreme Court nomination, as long as Democrats don't block the aid. The Senate took a break after multiple lawmakers tested positive for the virus.
Do hope you're having a beautiful Wednesday morning in the middle of October. Good to be with you. Coming up next, our dear friend, best-selling New York Times author and host of The World Over, news director, commentator, and just an all-around great guy, our very own Raymond Arroyo. A new book, you have to grab it. It's beautifully illustrated and a beautiful message, even for someone who does not like spiders. That would be me, the spider who saved Christmas. We'll be right back.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo. Your search for affordable health care stops here. Since 2014, CMF Curo has provided Catholics with affordable health care sharing that goes beyond insurance. With programs that cost less than many COBRA and ACA-sponsored plans, CMF Curo is a Catholic health sharing experience that enables you to live fully alive while saving money. Call 1-833-GET-CURO to find affordable Catholic health care now. That's 1-833-GET-CURO.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at avemariaradio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
Are you hungry for college football this fall? Hailing from sunny Southwest Florida, the Ave Maria Gyrenes will take on their Sun Division opponents for exciting and hard-hitting football. All games can be live-streamed by going to avemaria.edu and clicking on the Live-Stream Football button. On Saturday the 17th, the Gyrenes have a home rematch against Southeastern. Game time at 7 p.m. Tune in for great college football played by an authentic Catholic university. avemaria.edu.
Well, I couldn't wait to get Raymond Arroyo back on the program. I know he's so busy and just love watching him both on EWTN and on Fox. And I wrote him yesterday and I said he keeps me sane because it's so crazy out there. He just makes me laugh. He's great writing skills and speaking and presenting skills. But he just has this, Raymond, you got that Italian edge, my brother, that I just love. That is just keeps
well,
me.
Well, you got to keep laughing and motoring through the pain here.
I know.
It's a weird time.
Well, first of all, congrats on the book. And I have to say, when I received it, I was kind of scared to open it because I do have somewhat of a mild case of arachnophobia. So, you know, spiders are not my thing. But I have to say, it's so beautifully illustrated. And the spider, I can't believe I'm saying this, but the spider is really cute. But it's really well done. And let's talk, first of all, about where you got this with this idea from to use this as a means to help young people and families understand the true meaning of Christmas.
Well, look, this is actually an ancient legend. The spider who saved Christmas is what I called it, but this legend has apparently been around for centuries, and remnants of this story have always been with us. I mean, every Christmas you see trees covered in tinsel, you know, the sparkly tinsel hanging from the branches. Well, this legend explains why we decorate trees with tinsel at Christmas. Mm-hmm. It is an homage and a connection to this legend. So I thought, why have we forgotten this story? So I started researching it. I actually found it in a footnote of a Bible commentary. And it was on the Nativity, you know, Gospels. And it's there in a footnote. It says there's an ancient legend where the Holy Family fleeing to Egypt encounters a spider. And it went on. It was just about four sentences. Well, I started digging around. I found some versions of the story, but they were very bare and scarce, frankly, spare. So I decided to fill out the story, create a character, the spider, and you know, endow her with, you know, her own attributes. And it gave me an opportunity to also explore the dynamic of the Holy Family. It was a neat way in to a story that we thought we knew and that we took for granted. But this is a piece of the Christmas story after the birth of Jesus on the way to Egypt that we omit, forget,
right,
and don't
mm-hmm.
even think about, frankly.
Right. Exactly.
So I've loved how kids reading and families reading The Spider Who Saved Christmas. They sent me notes, my early readers, saying, you know, the kids wanted me to read it again and again, but they were asking all kinds of questions, like, why are they hiding in a cave, and who are these soldiers coming after them? So, you know, I've always been fascinated, and I don't know what this says about me, but I love Christmas. Mm-hmm. All year round, I play Christmas music in my car. I've always got Nat King Cole and Johnny Mathis in the car going. I love Christmas. But there is a dark side to Christmas. And what I mean by that is we often don't think of this family running for their lives, a child hunted. But that's what happens at the core of this story. And I thought to myself, you know, few of us can relate to virgin births or you know, animals coming in to, you know, to greet your child or three kings busting through the door with gifts. But we can all relate to anxiety, stress, tension, and worry about those you love, particularly your family. And that's what is at the heart of this story, and the hope that's always there, and God's grace that finds a way through even the most common instruments. That's really what The Spider Who Saved Christmas is all about.
So I know it's recently released, but it sounds like you're already getting a lot of good, you know, positive feedback. In terms of the, it is available now, right, through Sophia, correct?
No. It doesn't drop till tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
It's published tomorrow. But it's already been an Amazon bestseller. It's doing really well. You know, you said it. It's a beautiful book. And I went through three illustrators on this book, not unlike my other projects. But Randy Galagos, who illustrated this work, did such a beautiful job because his portraits, I don't even call them illustrations, mm-hmm. are dynamic. It feels like a movie storyboard. There's action in every scene. The spider so comes to life. There's almost a supernatural glow to the illustrations. He really did a beautiful job and captured the story and takes you to he lifts up nature and really makes something, I think, special here. And I love the way the story turned out.
Yeah, it's beautiful. How did you find the illustrator?
A lot of trial and error, a lot of recommendations. And Randy had done a lot of fantasy illustrations, fantasy books and covers. So I needed somebody who had that sensibility, but yet understood, the natural world and faces and people. So he beautifully captured, beautifully captured the story. And, Tolkien used to say, Teresa, that, legends are largely made of truth. And that's what I thought when I came across this story. Is everything here historically accurate? Who knows? But the story has been with us a long time. And you keep stories because they tell us something about ourselves and are almost manuals for living. And I love that this story, particularly, and look, a year and a half ago, I didn't even know we'd be in the middle of this COVID nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
But we are all, Teresa, as we approach Christmas, in our own caves, hiding out in some ways, worried about the health of our families, trying to keep death outside our door. And the message here is, and I think what the story reveals is that hope is always present. If you have the faith for it and the eyes for it, God will use whatever he has and whatever is nearby if you give him the permission to. And that's what happens to the Holy Family here. Like you, St. Joseph is not a fan of the spiders at the beginning of his story. He tries to kill the spider, rip the web down. Mary stops him.
Right.
And Our Lady at one point says, we're all here for a reason, let it be.
I love that, yeah.
And that ends up being the kind of theme that runs through the rest of the picture book.
Obviously, you recognize the voice of our friend, EWTN News Director, host of The World Over, New York Times bestselling author, Raymond Arroyo. Brand new book, actually, is coming out tomorrow. So we've got a little bit of an exclusive with Raymond this morning. Beautifully illustrated, yeah. Wonderful story. The Spider Who Saved Christmas. So what's your next book coming out? Any idea yet?
Well, I am working on another picture book. I can't tell you what it is, but it is it too fills in a little gap in the scriptures. I love stories that fill those quiet parts of stories we think we knew. And look, anytime you can find a legend or an ancient story, this one may go back to the second or third century. The other one I'm working on actually goes back further, but it fills in those moments and it makes perfect sense. And it's like a little puzzle piece you put in. Mm-hmm. And whether it happened or not is almost immaterial. It makes sense as a human being. It makes sense theologically. And I thought, so I'm working on a project like that. It's an Easter story. And it is also a picture book. So it's kind of fun writing for, wider audiences. I'm still writing for adults. You never stop writing for adults.
Right.
And I love picture books. I love children's books that you can read as a child and you can come back to as an adult, and it takes on a different glow and a different meaning, which is what happened, when I read Treasure Island or Peter Pan to my kids. The book changes. It moves on you because you've changed. Mm-hmm. And that's what good books do. They're true. And when you're dealing with truth, it's organic. It grows with you. And I think The Spider Who Saved Christmas has some of that. And it's the perfect project for now. We don't need Teresa, people are always after me, will you write a book about the Pope? Will you write a book about the scandals in the church? Will you write a book about politics in the church? I spend so much of my time there.
Exactly.
I can't do it. And I often say when I'm dead and gone, I want my children to think, he left us Will Wilder and some really fun, uplifting mm-hmm. picture books. That will be enough. All this other stuff will be forgotten. And I think there are enough people chronicling the decay and ruin. I need to point people to something else and remind them of the truths that last. And the goodness that exists if you're willing to look for it.
Exactly.
And nature is a big part of that.
Yeah, and I also think, too, that when you write something like this, and I love it, because there are things that we, a lot of things that we don't know, for example, about what happened in the birth and the life of Christ. And I think this is another form of Lectio Divina, where you're going into, even though you have this legend that you worked with, but you're going back and you're imagining what was it like. And this is what our spiritual directors always tell us. You place yourself there. What are you seeing? What's going on? Right?
Well, this was Mother Angelica's great gift, you know, and years of listening to her, and I edited a book called The Private and Pithy Lessons from the Scriptures. And it was all of Mother's, what I call, riffs on the Scriptures. You know, she would find those little nooks and crannies where we don't quite know what happened, but she would say, you know, I always thought that Jesus might have been Italian. For those on the side of the beach.
I love that. I would agree with her with that. I'm sorry, but I think so. Raymond, hang on. We're going to come back. Get this book. It's just so beautiful, powerful story, The Spider Who Saved Christmas by our friend Raymond Arroyo from EWTN. Sophia Institute, so we'll give you the links as well.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
I've been a priest for 31 years. It's a call to a total gift to Christ. It's a total gift of one's life to be conformed to Christ. You know, and that's why I felt it when I was a young guy and I was kind of getting into religion and understanding it more deeply intellectually. It just began to hit me with a great clarity that if this is true, if God is real and God is a supreme good, well, why wouldn't I give my whole self to God? Why would I get distracted by anything else, you know? Now, again, I'm not saying that should be true for every single person on the planet. That's the way it hit me when I was a young guy, was I want to give as much as I can, my whole self, to Christ. So there's something heroic about that, where you do eschew a lot of things. You say no to a lot of things so you can say massively yes to Christ and to his demand. I think that's a heroic quality of it.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What does the Holy Spirit do for the Church? The Catholic Catechism tells us that behind every vital and saving action in each part of the body, the Church, is the Holy Spirit. There are numerous venues through which the Holy Spirit works to build up the body in charity. Through baptism, through the sacraments, through the grace of the apostles, through the virtues, through charisms. Charisms are special graces from the Holy Spirit which directly or indirectly benefit the Church. The Catechism describes a charism as a wonderfully rich grace for the apostolic vitality and holiness of the entire body, provided they are genuine gifts and are used in response to authentic promptings of the Holy Spirit in keeping with charity, the true measure of all charisms. This is Peggy Stanton. And this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection. Having a great conversation with our friend, EWTN News Director, host of The World Over, best-selling author. Number of books, including his latest, which is actually coming out this week from our friends at Sophia Institute Press. And you can go, of course, to Raymond's website, or EWTN.com, the religious catalog. We'll have a link for it, The Spider Who Saved Christmas, published again by Sophia, also on the Catholic Connection archive section. What I thought was fascinating about this book, and again, I was a little bit hesitant. I love you very much as a brother, but I'm not a spider person. But her face, Nophilia's face, was so peaceful. Her eyes are beautiful. But also the story, the intricacy of which of the spider and the web and the way they communicate, which you did some research on as well.
I did. Well, you know, these are golden orb weavers. Now, look, I made a decision. We don't know what spider they might have encountered, but this is a spider indigenous to the Middle East. It's also in South America. The golden orb weavers, and the reason I chose the breed is they spin a very rare, sought after, and collected silk that kings would make, coats from, and they would upholster chairs in it. But it's kind of a yellow goldenish silk. The neat thing about this breed of spider is, and what we're finding out through research now, is spiders communicate through the legs on the back of their bodies.
Amazing.
They pluck at the webs. They actually pluck, and through vibration, they communicate. So here, my spider, Nathalia, she plucks on the web to call her children forth to help her in her service to the Holy Family. I'll leave it there. And there's some neat Easter eggs in the illustration, which I won't ruin, but kids have caught a few of them. But we've hidden some things in the illustrations throughout the book that I think make it come to life and special.
Well, congratulations. Beautifully done. And again, the book is Thank The Spider you. Who Saved Christmas by our friend Raymond Arroyo. Okay, I want to shift gears a bit here and talk a little bit about the craziness out there. Raymond, you and I have known each other for a long time. We both have a similar background in news, and we were trained a certain way. I was telling my listeners at the top of the hour, to me, I've never seen such extreme bias and propaganda where I believe now, and when I wrote my first book, Noise, and you were one of the first to interview me when that came out,
right.
I used to say there were no actual places where they were sitting around and getting together with networks and newspapers and whatnot and, you know, doing something all in one movement, that there was some sort of an agreement or meetings. But I don't believe that anymore, because it's just, if you watch the coverage, the phraseology, the terminology, mm-hmm. the timing of stories, there has to be some sort of an effort going on with these major secular outlets, who, by the way, are owned by, you know, just a few people. But it's to the point now where it's nothing more than being mouthpiece for the left.
Yeah. Well, look, there was a time, and you nailed it in the book years and years ago. There was a time, look, I worked on Capitol Hill. I was a beat reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was mostly laziness and job preservation
right.
that created a kind of sameness in the coverage, because you didn't want Teresa to get a better story than you out of that beat that day. So everybody kind of had a gentleman's agreement of what we would cover, which is why you've got 12 hours of coverage that day, and the same three bites ended up on the
sound
evening
bites,
news.
Right.
Well, how
mm-hmm.
is that possible? Well, it's because there's kind of this gentleman. What are you using? Well, I'm using, you know, oh, yeah, that's probably better. And, you know, it's that sort of thing. Well, now this has totally shifted. We have all of these networks, with rare exception, have become extensions of these campaigns, particularly in this election year. I mean, I watch multiple networks in the evening. And last night I had, you know, the split screen on. And between networks, it's night and day coverage. One is talking about this death count from COVID as if everybody's dropping like flies every time mm-hmm. they leave their den. And on the other network, they're covering Trump with thousands of people at a rally. And, you know, but no coverage of Joe Biden at all. I mean, I have to tell you, look, on Fox, I cover Joe Biden almost nightly. I may be the only person covering Joe Biden's campaign, like covering every event. We let you see every event the man does every day. It's not always a pretty picture, but the reality is it's we're covering it. These other folks aren't at all. They're simply ignoring it. And the question is why? How do you have a major candidate who simply is not covered? They just do voiceover and say, Joe Biden went to Florida today to campaign with seniors. And we don't hear any bite from the speech. Nothing. Why is that? I'm very concerned about this. I mean, the American people, and for democracy and a republic to work,
mm-hmm.
they have to be informed. It is a well-informed populace that the founders were depending upon
exactly.
to keep this experiment running. And I am really worried that that piece of it is missing, because we don't have a well-informed populace. So much of this is propaganda, and it's tragic. It's tragic.
Well, you combine that, Raymond, and this is something that you cover extensively as well in your work. You combine that with the poor catechesis, and I know that you know Mother better than anybody. And one of the main reasons she started EWTN was to have that catechesis to help people understand their faith, that their faith has to come first. This combination of what we're talking about in this ill-informed public combined with poor catechesis, I'm sure you see it. I see it, unfortunately, not with the majority of our listeners and viewers, because they're listening to us. They're at a particular place in their understanding, because they're reaching out to find Catholic media. But we know that there are many people who listen to us and watch us that write us and say, well, okay, fine, you know, the church teaches us about abortion, it bothers me a bit, but these issues are bigger, it's all about my feelings. And yet
right.
what they're sending us is information from an extremely, let's be honest, a leftist press. I mean, literally lies. Mm-hmm. And using things like anonymous sources, which you and I know, we're trained that that's the last thing you do, that's a last resort.
Yeah.
Anonymous sources, no context, confirmation bias, which is the whole thing with Amy Coney Barrett right now, as it was with Nicholas
yep.
Sammon and Brett Kavanaugh. And they're still believing a lot of it. And that, to me, is tragic on a number of levels.
Yeah. Well, again, these are all extensions. This is media as extensions of campaigns, communications, you know, organs of the campaign. And I'm particularly disturbed by what I'm seeing in Catholic and Christian media this season, because rather than allowing those entities to objectively report whatever the news is and put it through a lens of faith, the campaigns have decided, and mostly the Biden campaign, which spent a lot of money on ads in those markets, to try to smudge the record here. And look, no matter what you think of Joe Biden, he may be a very nice person. I knew Joe Biden years ago. He was always genial and kindly fun. But the reality is he has markedly changed on the major issue of life. I mean, he used to support the Hyde Amendment. He no longer supports the Hyde Amendment. He used to be for restrictions on abortion and pro-life. He now believes in abortion up to the 9th month with no restrictions at all. So you just have to say, look, this is his position. But instead, they say he prays the rosary every day. He turns to his faith in moments of need. You know, they do all of this kind of gauzy stuff to fill in the blanks. I ultimately don't know if it will work, but watching the money being used to politicize faith in the worst sort of way. I mean, look, people can decide on these issues as they will. I always tell people, vote for who you'd like to vote for. You may go vote for Joe Biden. You may go vote for Donald Trump. But don't try to make it a sacred act and pretend what you're doing isn't violating creeds and beliefs.
Thank you.
Of the church that you profess.
Amen.
That's my only caveat.
Exactly. That's what I keep saying. Raymond, thanks so much. Love to have you back on soon. Our dear friend, news director at EWTN, host of The World Over, a best-selling author, latest book, The Spider Who Saved Christmas. Check it out. And it's RaymondArroyo.com. We'll be right back.
Get more information on today's guest and download the program from the Ave Maria Radio website, AveMariaRadio.net. And when your local radio signal is out of reach, listen live on the Ave Maria Radio app.
Call to Communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
What is criticism exactly? If you pay close attention, do you notice what most criticism is? Oh, it's not because you're doing something wrong or hurtful, something that needs corrected. Most criticism is, you're not doing it the way I would do it. Or you're not doing it the way I want you to do it. That's what most criticism is. And you have to get good at sorting that out. Otherwise, you're going to get real upset when anyone says anything about what you are doing. Now, of course, you could turn this on yourself. Do you do that? Is most of your criticism a message to someone else that says, you're not doing it the way I would do it? Well, save your criticism for things that are really wrong.
Support for Ave Maria programming comes in part by CatholicCounselors.com. Self-help resources and support from Catholic telecounselors from the privacy of home. CatholicCounselors.com, helping your faith, life, and relationships flourish.
Wrapping up a Wednesday, as we always do, with one of our most popular guests, Joan Lewis, Joan's Rome. You also see here on At Home with Jim and Joy Pinto. She has a great blog and on radio and always well-informed. And I have to tell you, I was so sad. I was watching some of the news programs last night. They did a story on the economies in Europe and how they've been infected by coronavirus. And Italy was the worst hit financially. Broke my heart.
Oh, yeah.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. No, it's really been a shame. And, I mean, the government has been... I think those who expected the government to come up with some kind of an aid package, like, you know, restaurants that had to close for 5 months, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of them are still waiting. And so, you know, the money, it hasn't even physically gone into people's hands. And the government is still working on new plans and everything. I mean, things were bad before COVID as far as the financial economic situation in this country. So we did not need, you know, a disaster to be like someone having a small amount of money in the bank and then they have to have heart surgery without insurance. So, you know, that small amount of money is going to last 7 minutes. But anyway, the new... The state of emergency is going on here until further change, until January 31st. Now, what that simply means is, in declaring all these coming months the continuing state of emergency, it means that the government can hop in when necessary to make new rules and restrictions, or obviously to lessen some of the restrictions. Mm-hmm. But I know I sent you a piece on the new things that were announced yesterday by the government, including the number of people that can attend an outside sporting event in a stadium, like 1,000 people. The fact that they're saying no to parties and gatherings, and if you have, I can have guests in my home, but I can't have, including me, more than 6 people, you know, at the table. And in the beginning, it was thought it meant just your immediate family. But it does say family and friends if there's a gathering. Weddings, et cetera, weddings and funerals, no more than 30 people allowed to be present. But I think what bothers me about this whole thing, you know, because you and I are getting, we're talking about these facts simply hoping that one day I can tell you and we'll all know that Italy will be open up to, you know, travelers from the States and everything else. But I think what bothers me, and if I don't say this once a week to you, then I'm sure I have, are the statistics. Okay, deaths are still in two digits. They were 40-some deaths, I think, yesterday, and they've only been in single or low double digits up until yesterday. But the case numbers are new, and part of that is due, they're simply increasing their testing. But the thing is, if you look at the number of new cases, let's say 4,000 or 5,000 in a day, how many of them are hospitalized ends up being a very small number. Because there are either asymptomatic people, they have COVID but don't show it, and don't feel it, but now they're going to be in quarantine. And so it's, the numbers are growing because of the increased testing. But what I want to know is, when are you guys going to give us some information on tracing? You know, did 59 people get sick because 6 of them attended dinner parties at friends' homes? You know, I'd love to know a little more about the tracing. If you're going to limit us at home now, does that mean a lot of the cases came from people having dinner parties? And the average dinner party, Teresa, you and I know, and I think our listeners, is probably going to be anywhere from 4 to 8 people, the average.
Right.
Your friends, your relatives, your neighbors, your parishioners, whatever. You don't have 20 people for dinner. Might you reserve a room in a restaurant for 20 people because somebody is having a big birthday? I suppose that's the case. But then tell us that. Tell us it was a public gathering. So I just am upset at not having tracing, not knowing why would you close, you know, a church. Churches, I don't remember if there's anything, see if I can find it, on churches, except for weddings and things like that. But there will be no more school tours, you know, scholastic trips for kids. It's obviously nothing in public. No big public gatherings or demonstrations, et cetera. So the worship apparently is okay. You can still go if your church, which can accommodate 400 people, only does not go beyond 100. Well, for example, every Sunday at St. Patrick's, I always get to Mass quite early. Mm-hmm. And I just sit at the front desk now. It's just kind of automatic. Our sacristan Daniel sees me and turns the desk over to me, and I count people as they come in. And then we have sanitizer all over the church.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we have extra masks if anybody needs it. So it doesn't appear to be a greater restriction on churches, thank the Lord.
Now, what impact is this going to have you, being that the emergencies are in place? Can you still get home for the holidays? Are you able to come home? Because I know you keep changing your flights. What about people, expats, wanting to come home?
I have talked so far to two people who have traveled, two Americans who have traveled in, like, say, the last couple months, one to go home for a family situation. The other person visited, I think I was told, Washington and then North Dakota, South Dakota. In any event, they came back and they had a quarantine for 14 days. So I think that now has been reduced to 10. Especially if you come with some kind of a certificate that says you're COVID free. But I mean, I have to look into where I want to go. Here we are, October. I haven't taken a vacation yet or any time off this year. And normally my summer vacation would be August or September.
Right.
And that's the part of the year that I go to California and Hawaii, both of which are having problems. And would I have to quarantine someplace? So, I got my fourth email since March from United Airlines telling me that my October 26th flight has been canceled. Well, I please call them to, you know. Yeah. So I just don't know what to do. Do I now look at going home for Christmas and then I find out that, you know, 17 million people have the flu? And
right.
So, I mean, it's wonderful. I live in a beautiful city. I have friends. I can go to church. Most of my life is very normal. It may be reduced in numbers for things, but very normal. And yet, this is not where I want a vacation.
Right.
It's just you're here all year long. You want to
have a change of scenery.
Americans and family. Yeah.
Well, what about, and we were talking online, as we always do in preparation for the show, that this week some stories came out, actually broke on Sunday, where the World Health Organization leaders are now saying that lockdowns don't work and that we shouldn't use them automatically for a way to control the spread of the coronavirus. And that has gotten very little coverage here in the United States,
exactly.
except for Fox News and other conservative outlets. And that is extremely frustrating to me that now you have the World Health Organization who's saying this is the lockdowns are worse than the coronavirus itself, and that's being ignored, and people are still very paranoid, and something's got to give. I mean, the economy in Italy, for example, is tanking, and not only in Italy, but in terms, I mean, they were already in trouble before the coronavirus.
I mean, I still, for example, taking a bus to Mass or something on Sunday, I pass by stores that are closed, the stores that, frankly, on a Sunday would normally be open. Or a few other times that I've been, I just don't really go out unless I have to. And when I have to, it's my neighborhood, which means the supermarket or...
And Lavatoria,
Or Lavatoria, exactly. But I'm not all over the city of Rome these days. But I have seen, when I've been in taxis or buses, I've seen places that I know are normally open. They're totally shuttered. I mean, it's not like they're closed on Sunday. They're shuttered. So businesses that have undoubtedly failed, and how do you come back? Because unless you sell your business, you are still paying rent to the people from whom you rent your space as a store. So those costs continue. And I'm sure there's, even if you don't have utilities on, there's probably some kind of an ongoing utility fee that you'd have to pay. So, no, it's very, very devastating. But what I don't understand, Teresa, okay, on the 3rd of this month, masks, that was a Saturday, masks were made mandatory 24/7, unless, of course, you're in your own home. So inside a place or outside on the sidewalk. And the fine, apparently, I've read 1,000 euro, I've read 400 euro. It's probably in between those two. In any case, everybody is wearing a mask. So then why are our numbers going up?
Mm-hmm.
That's just what I don't understand.
Yeah.
And I think that's why that the World Health Organization thing hasn't got much play here, because the government, I think, just feels that they have to close down. Now, and the Vatican's complying with, of course, a lot of these rules, too. They now, whereas I could go in, you know, this back entrance that I take into Vatican City, I could go in that without a mask. I could walk through the basilica without a mask, and then once I was in the basilica for mass, you know, I would have to have the mask on. But no longer, I couldn't get past the guards without a mask. So entering Vatican City State, and there's some places that give you a temperature test. The bank does, and the stores, you know, they've got the little thermometer guns that they point
right
at you. So
yeah,
it's an ongoing thing, and you're inside Vatican City. You see everybody wearing their masks, and the gendarmes, the Swiss guards, you know. So, oh, and speaking of masks, what was very interesting about today's audience was that at the very end of the audience in the Paul VI hall, because of the inclement weather here, Pope Francis said, "As I usually do, I'd love to come down and be near to greet you, but with the new rules, it's better to keep a distance. I have, however, heartfelt greetings for the sick from here." And his chair was moved back in the Paul VI hall, much closer to that big metal sculpture in the back of the hall, whereas last week he was probably, oh, if I say 20 or 30 feet, I could be wrong, but he was closer to people. He was, and if you recall seeing the video from last week, I mean, there was handshaking, there was the Holy Father who kissed the hands of a newly ordained priest. So the Pope said today, you know, he said, "The problem is when I come down to greet you, everybody comes close together in a bunch, and there's the danger of contagion. So now, everyone wearing a mask, keeping our distance, we can go on with the audience. So pardon me today if I greet you from afar, but I believe if we all, as good citizens, follow the rules set by authorities, this will help end the pandemic." So,
But it hasn't so far. I mean, I don't know. Yes, exactly. There's just so much confusion on this, and to ignore, for the media to just, you know, quote World Health Organization, you know, every which way but Sunday, and then when the World Health Organization makes a turnaround and says, you know what, we have to reconsider, these lockdowns are not working and they're devastating in many areas, and then for the media to ignore that, and then there's no follow-up with authorities, whether they're civil authorities or church authorities, on seeing how this applies, something's rotten in Denmark. Something's got to be adjusted, because economies are going, you know, are going just into the red, to the point where people are... there's got to be a balance. The reporter in me is saying, exactly, Something's not right. Something's not right.
Yeah, we can't say, okay, totally disregard distancing and masks and everything. We can't say that. But then on the other hand, we can obey those rules, but there just has to be, like you said, a balance.
Right.
Some leeway in some of these matters. And
yeah.
If it was proven that of 1,000 new cases in Italy, 800 came from restaurants, okay.
Right.
You'd have a wonderful reason to, if it was proven, you'd have a great reason to close them or limit them. But that's where, as I said earlier, I have the problem with the tracing.
Right.
Okay, are you doing a lot more testing, you know, than before, and people are positive? That part of it I can understand.
But on the one end, and we're out of time, you can't sit there and take the World Health Organization as your top source and then ignore something they say several months later because you want to keep people, for whatever reason, locked down. That doesn't make any sense. That's where the balance and the explanations are needed. We'll be right back on a Wednesday morning.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo.
Life, religious freedom, and healthcare are at stake in this year's election. Do you have the right tools to confidently cast a vote that's informed by your Catholic faith? Join the Christ Medicus Foundation, CMF Curo, Divine Mercy University, and the Catholic Medical Association October 20th for Decision 2020, the informed Catholic voter. This 90-minute virtual event uses the lens of faith to address the important issues. Register for this free event at CatholicHealthcareConference.com.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Everyday living. Effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
There's a lot of uncertainty in the world right now. Companies have temporarily stopped hiring. Sporting events are held without fans. Even your friends are being told to keep their social distance from you. However, at Ave Maria University, we ask you to consider advancing while the world around you recedes. Gaining an online master's degree in business administration or theology can propel you forward, distinguishing you from the competition when companies again start hiring. Apply now at avemaria.edu.
Coming up tomorrow, you don't want to miss it. We have the new president of Ave Maria University, who is going to be hosting our wine, Women in the New Evangelization, our post-election getaway. And we're also going to be chatting with Dr. Ralph Martin about faith and voting. Talk to you then.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.